Finance Committee plan to order a formal line on January 22nd. President Rubin and Representative Slater, Shrike, Scott Mills, and myself, Eagles. I think with that care, maybe a friendly reminder that I want to hear my son. Please ask your son before speaking for health records. First, we'll have hearing on House Bill 117, and after that, we'll have our second hearing on Water and Commerce Committee and Mini Bill HB 132. My goal of these is to get for House Bill 117 by House Bill 30, and then House Bill 132. We're going to have invited testimony before, so I was at your meeting. If these are set for talks, you will be at their caucus. So, Pat, Representative Ortiz and Ms. Caroline Yip are going to represent if you want to send a team to send the board of directors and big ones for the first year and then they run numbers. Representative Ortiz. And then Representatives Nelson and Grady, I'll have a present.
Deficit, and as a result, this board has one of the primary occupation. We turn to the next page, page 9, and we see the schedule of revenues and expenditures. And it shows that the board had done for the just over $19,000 as of January 2020. At the time of the audit, DCPPL's management believed that the deficit would be fully resolved by the end of FY21. Moving on to report conclusions to audit recommendations, page 11. First, we recommend the board recommends statutory changes to benefit the public. The board identified a need to change some education statutes to align Alaska's micro laws with national standards. However, due to concerns on the legal costs involved with the project, the board did not recommend the changes. Recommendation number 2 is on page 12. We recommend DCPPL's chief investigator ensure investigations are completed timely. Auditors reviewed 3 cases that have been open for over 180 days during the audit period, and we found in all 3 cases justified periods of inactivity by 30, 34, and 114 days. According to the DCPPL staff, the inactivity was the result of turnover and competing priorities. Recommendation number 3, we recommend the board improve oversight of their peer review process. The board delegated peer reviews to the Midwives Association of Alaska's Accident and Accountability Committee. However, the board did not establish procedures to provide assurance that the peer reviews would be completed accurately and adequately. An accurate and adequate monitoring of the peer review process increases risk that the reviews will be deficient, which in turn increases the risk of public safety. Responses to the plan begin on page 23. The Commissioner of the Department of Homeland Community and Economic Development does not respond to recommendations 1 and 3 because they were directed to the board. In response to recommendation number 2 regarding the improving the timeline for investigations, the Commissioner stated that the department was adding an additional supervisory position to assist with the caseload. The board chair's response begins on page 25. The chair expressed disappointment with that short 2-year extension recommendation. Regarding recommendation number 1, to pursue statutory changes when needed, the chair claims the board in action was justified as a measure of these costs, and that the board should not be penalized for their legal responsibility. In response to recommendation number 2, to improve the timeliness of the investigative process, the board chair concurs with the recommendation but does not believe that it should impact their extension recommendation. And in response to recommendation number 3, to improve monitoring the peer review process, the board chair concurs with the recommendation.
As the best way to double the lines, that's a very first thing, and then they all can be available for special briefs. This allows the government to make revenue proceeding just
right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
and currently right now, but that there are kind of in process that haven't been sort of all approved, you know, all the way to the very end, and that possibly encourages them to give the opportunity to document those and come back at, you know, see that an issue or something at that time.
Thank you. is to make qualified training and supervision available. It's not just a on-the-job training program with no supervision. Our programs commit to equal employment opportunity sites. The federal minimum age for registered apprenticeship is 16 years. Established by the National
municipal code. So that applies to all apprenticeships in the state of Alaska. For example, it doesn't happen in a Grand Valley Association. That apprenticeships would also apply in midwifery, so that apprenticeship in midwifery we decided on it to go.
towards every patient as the best delivery care, mentor ratio, this may vary based on application and RPI, and at least within 44 hours per year, plus the average job training and the length of the clinician varies. What else are the kind of benchmark compliance kind of questions to work with based on the kind of standards?
Thank you.
today, that means that the words are exactly as they are, whereas the three letters in the presentation, none of the programs are similar to our programs, so what drives the emphasis is, something we have in the core multi-employer structures, intermediaries, where they whether it's the primary care association or the pharmacy health centers, or the pharmacy training committee, those are intermediaries, the multi-employer structures.
Yeah.
Thank you.
this differently. And we have thought in about a decade later on, the current number 30 was kind of our only online value objective. I'm pretty sure we all have our great components to this. Thank you, sir, for your attention.
Software. where we can see all the different revenue streams that go to fund this program. You know, different forms of federal money. For instance, is there, you know, veterans money that's goes into these programs as well as similar to other continuing education?
Traditionally, what programs utilize for the last majority of my customers in jail.
not see that in a very small amount. And I would like to see some of the numbers you're talking about.
Thank you. Thank you.
creative agents or entrepreneurship, this college amazing program. Do they agree to want to go to UNI degree? And they find a global feature, which we know is going to increase completion rates. Okay, that's amazing stuff, but we need to support other school districts that have similar programs in place. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you.
in St. Alaska for DEDDL in partnership with school districts, because what I've heard from school district staff is they don't have the folks on the ground to establish additional partnerships with employers or recruit additional employers. If they're apprenticeships and new school representatives, they can just expand the person to go credit. So that's something I'm hoping we can follow up on with the departments, because this bill can provide a policy framework in terms of what they can rely on the federal government. And fortunately, there's $87.5 million that the law really needs to build on the field. Do you have some additional questions? So, Ms. Riddle, thank you, and maybe we can follow up on that conversation offline. Do you have some additional questions for Ms. Rockwood? Or perhaps not.
This is $87.5 million for the entire country that received credit for $485 million for AZL1.
Thank you. can't do it that way. So.
Well, I move to bring the committee substitute to the 132 version 32-LX0476X-D before the committee for discussion.
Are there any objections? Okay, Representative Nelson, do you want to make your objections? What's the committee substitute? Sorry. Thank you for asking that question. Every committee substitute for Representative McCrashen does not have to pass the law related to it and deal with that separately. We also made some critical changes for Mr. Hawkwell's advice. And those are then also the testimony of Mark Fallon from the Care Association. Ensuring that the tax credit and vote for nonprofits should not be refundable. So these are the three program changes for the CVS. Is there additional discussion of CVS and the city of the other committee objection? The vote is to adopt the CVS third best benefit of the CVS. Some policies in place in the state of Montana, so there are some in terms of tax credits for prices and additional tax credits for veterans. I think Mr. Nelson is going to have to do other incentives to support veterans who are at risk of sending away from a reporting employer, which, you know, as a state, we try to encourage employers to hire veterans. So I guess there may be a difference of opinion. I'll say it's a double dip. We're trying to really just encourage employers to hire veterans. Does that answer your question?
Well, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. So, if veterans are hiring veterans, we want to employers to payroll not veterans with having a credit in itself, and therefore your tax credit government. So, I'm wondering for the payroll aspects of the tax credit programs, we certainly appreciate the veterans, so I appreciate veterans. And it's very cool for appreciation that we have to take some credit for other people, but my jobs are also there. Employees that are strictly looking for veterans.
So, good question, Representative Nelson.
Thank you. But Medicare, and to answer that, there is already some federal regulations on that. I believe through training has to be limited to, I think, this is perhaps I'm going to see some federal things that are presented to employees has to be are limited to just veterans. And you can no longer go above that. So you can't have a possible actively serving or product service individuals. And so the answer to that already happens in our work. So I've talked to many people in labor and apprenticeships that say, hey, if we wanted to, we can have processes full of apprenticeships full of military individuals. There's not a lack of that. That's when people are wanting to go there. So I've kind of seen it as an incentive program for us.
Representative
Taylor. Yes, thank you, Chair. Wanted to note with you that I also offered this up along with Representative Shorty just for the record. And to the question about the need in making sure we're not over addressing the needs of veterans and their other groups, I think it is part of the answer to recognize that veterans are overrepresented in terms of being eligible and realizing food benefits, for example. That's one small piece of the puzzle, but there is a great need in that population. I did want to highlight my current testimony in previous hearings about the importance of gainful employment for our veterans. We were talking about ensuring that they can serve their country. And that's either earn respectable living, or if we're talking about veterans who are returning from deployment, dealing with PTSD, or reintegrating into public life, the opportunities we just could afford them. And mean, the matter of life and death is different. And it recognizes the particular needs of our veterans are a very important part of the health functioning. And I just want to know from a personal perspective, I wish this was something that had been in place when my cousin, who really came back after his third deployment. And he struggled with PTSD, he struggled with finding a job and placing gainful employment. I wish there had been something like that for when he came back. Everything that we can do to add to making sure we have a smooth experience for veterans coming back, I think we should take that opportunity.
And thank you for clarifying this as an amendment by the Representative Shorty. And so we've got to withdraw that objection to our members' objection to this amendment.
Yes. to begin seeing it, or actually seeing it on the job training, not just how it seemed when we focused on the participants.
Okay, thank you very much. That's the whole thing.
Thank you.
Wednesday, the 15th, and at 7:30, the House Armed Commerce Committee.